Chapter 10. Hippolyte moistened his lips with a cup of tea handed to him by Vera Lebedev, put down the cup on the little table, and seemed suddenly embarrassed, and looked about him almost in confusion.
"Look at these cups, Lizaveta Prokofievna," he began with a sort of strange haste. "These china cups. And I think they are very good china. And never used, and always stand in Lebedev's sideboard under glass, locked up, as the custom is. They are part of his wife's dowry. It's their custom to keep them locked up. And here he's brought them out for us. In your honour, of course. He is so pleased to see you."
He meant to say more, but could not think of anything.
"He's feeling awkward. I thought he would,"
Yevgeny Pavlovich whispered suddenly in Mushkin's ear.
"It's dangerous, isn't it? It's a sure sign that now he'll do something out of spite so eccentric that it will be too much for even Lizaveta Prokofievna, perhaps."
Mushkin looked at him inquiringly.
"You're not afraid of eccentricity," added Yevgeny Pavlovich. "I'm not either. I should like it, in fact. I'm only anxious that our dear Lizaveta Prokofievna should be punished, and today, too, this minute, and I don't want to go till she has been. You seem feverish.
Afterwards, don't bother me."
"Yes, I'm not well," Mushkin answered carelessly and even impatiently.
He caught his own name. Hippolyte was speaking of him.
"You don't believe it,"
Hippolyte laughed hysterically.
"You'd be sure not to, but the prince will believe it at once and not be a bit surprised."
"Do you hear, prince?" said Lizaveta Prokofievna, turning to him. "Do you hear?"
People laughed round them. Lebedev kept officiously putting himself forward and fussing about Lizaveta Prokofievna.
"He was saying that this clown here, your landlord, corrected the article for this gentleman, the one they read this evening about you."
Mushkin looked at Lebedev in surprise.
"Why don't you speak?"
cried Lizaveta Prokofievna, stamping her foot.
"Well," muttered Mushkin, scanning Lebedev. "I see now that he did."
"Is it true?"
Lizaveta Prokofievna turned quickly to Lebedev.
"It's the holy truth, Your Excellency,"
answered Lebedev firmly, without hesitation, laying his hand on his heart.
"He seems to be proud of it,"
she cried, nearly jumping up from her chair.
"I am a poor creature,"
muttered Lebedev. His head sank lower and lower, and he began to smite himself on the breast.
"What do I care if you are a poor creature? He thinks he'll get out of it by saying he's a poor creature. And aren't you ashamed, prince, to have to do with such contemptible people? I ask you once again. I shall never forgive you."
The prince will forgive me,"
said Lebedev sentimentally, and with conviction.
"Simply from good feeling,"
Keller said in a loud, ringing voice, suddenly darting up to them and addressing Lizaveta Prokofievna directly.
"Simply from good feeling, madam. And to avoid giving away a friend who is compromised. I said nothing this evening about the corrections, although he did suggest kicking us downstairs, as you heard yourself. To put things in their true light, I confess that I really did apply to him as a competent person and offered him 6 rubles, not to correct the style, but simply to give me the facts, which were for the most part unknown to me. The gaiters, the appetite at the Swiss professors, the 50 rubles instead of 250... In fact, all that arrangement, all that belongs to him. He sold it me for 6 rubles, but he did not correct the style. I must observe,
Lebedev interposed with feverish impatience and in a sort of crawling voice, while the laughter grew louder and louder,
that I only corrected the first half of the article, but as we didn't agree in the middle and quarrelled over one idea, I didn't correct the second half, so that everything that is bad grammar there, and some of it is bad grammar, mustn't be set down to me.
That's what he's worried about,
cried Lizaveta Prokofievna.
Allow me to ask you, said Yevgeny Pavlovich, addressing Keller. When was the article corrected?
Yesterday morning,
answered Keller.
We met together, promising on our honour to keep the secret on both sides.
This was while he was crawling before you, protesting his devotion. A nice set of people. I don't want your Pushkin, and don't let your daughter come and see me.
Lizaveta Prokofievna was on the point of getting up, but suddenly turned irritably to Hippolyte, who was laughing.
"Have you put me here to be a laughing-stock, young man?"
"Heaven forbid," said Hippolyte with a wry smile. "But what strikes me most of all is your extraordinary eccentricity, Lizaveta Prokofievna.
I confess I led up the conversation to Lebediev on purpose. I knew the effect it would have on you, and on you only. For the prince will certainly forgive it, and has probably forgiven it already. He has found an excuse for him in his own mind by now, most likely. That's true, prince, isn't it?
He was breathless. His strange excitement grew greater at every word.
Well,
said Lizaveta Prokofievna wrathfully, wondering at his tone.
Well? I've heard a great deal about you, of the same sort of thing, with great pleasure. I've learned to respect you extremely,
Ippolit went on. He said one thing, but said it as though he meant something quite different by the words. He spoke with a shade of mockery, yet at the same time was unaccountably excited. He looked about him uneasily. He was obviously muddled, and lost the thread of what he was saying at every word. All this, together with his consumptive appearance and strange, glittering, and almost frenzied eyes, could not fail to hold the general attention.
I should have been surprised. Though I know nothing of the world, I am aware of that, that you're not only remaining yourself in our company, though we were not fit company for you, but even allowing these young ladies to listen to a scandalous business, though they have read it all in novels already. Though I don't know, perhaps, because I am muddled. But in any case, who could have stayed except you, at the request of a boy? Well, yes, a boy, I confess it again, to spend the evening with him and to take part in everything, though you knew you would be ashamed next day. I must admit I'm not expressing myself properly. I commend all this extremely and respect it profoundly, though one can see from the very countenance of His Excellency, your husband, how improper all this seems to him.
He chuckled, completely at a loss, and he suddenly coughed, so that for 2 minutes he could not go on.
Now he is choking,
Lizaveta Prokofievna pronounced coldly and sharply, scanning him with stern curiosity.
Well, my dear fellow, we've had enough of you. We must be going.
Allow me, too, sir, to tell you for my part,
Ivan Fyodorovitch broke out irritably, losing patience,
that my wife is here visiting Prince Lyov Nikolaevich, our friend and neighbour, and that in any case it's not for you, young man, to criticise Lizaveta Prokofievna's actions, nor to refer aloud and to my face to what is written on my countenance. No, sir. And if my wife has remained here,
he went on, his irritation increasing almost at every word.
It's rather from amazement, sir, and from an interest comprehensible nowadays to all in the spectacle of strange young people. I stopped myself, as I sometimes stop in the street when I see something at which one can look as
a curiosity, Yevgeny Pavlovich prompted him.
Excellent and true.
His Excellency, rather at a loss for a comparison, was delighted.
Precisely, as a curiosity. But in any case, what is more amazing than anything, and even regrettable to me, if it is grammatical so to express oneself, is that you are not even able, young man, to understand that Lizaveta Prokofievna has stayed with you now because you are ill. If only you really are dying. So to say, from compassion, for the sake of your piteous appeal, sir, and that no kind of slur can in any case attach to her name, character, and consequence. Lizaveta Prokofievna,
the general concluded with a crimson face,
if you mean to go, let us take leave of our dear prince.
Thank you for the lesson, general,
Ippolit interrupted suddenly, speaking earnestly and looking thoughtfully at him.
"Let's go, Maman. How much longer is this to go on?"
Aglaya said wrathfully and impatiently, getting up from her chair.
2 minutes more, dear Ivan Fyodorovitch, if you allow it.
Lizaveta Prokofievna turned with dignity to her husband.
"I believe he is in a fever and simply delirious. I am sure of it from his eyes. He can't be left like this. Lyov Nikolaevich, could he stay the night with you, that he needn't be dragged to Petersburg tonight?" "Cher Prince, I hope you are not bored,"
she added, for some reason suddenly addressing Prince S.
"Come here, Alexandra, put your hair tidy, my dear."
She did something to Alexandra's hair, which was already perfectly tidy, and kissed her. That was all she had called her for.
"I thought you were capable of development,"
Ippolit began again, coming out of his reverie.
"Yes, this was what I meant to say."
He was delighted, as though suddenly remembering something.
"Badovsky here genuinely wants to protect his mother, doesn't he? And it turns out that he has disgraced her. The prince here wants to help Badovsky, and in all sincerity offers him his tender friendship and a fortune. And perhaps he is the only one of us who does not feel an aversion for him. And yet they stand facing one another like actual enemies. You all hate Badovsky, because to your thinking he has behaved in an ugly and unseemly way to his mother. Isn't that so? Isn't it? Isn't it? You are all awfully fond of external beauty and seemliness, and that's all you care for. That's true, isn't it? I've suspected that was all you care for a long time. Well, let me tell you that very likely not one of you has loved his mother as Badovsky has. I know, Prince, you've sent money to Badovsky's mother on the sly through Ganya, and I'll bet...
He laughed hysterically.
I'll bet that now Badovsky will accuse you of indelicacy and disrespect to his mother. I swear that's how it will be!
At this point he choked again and coughed.
Well, is that all? That's all now. You've said everything. Well, now go to bed. You are in a fever.
Lizaveta Prokofievna interrupted impatiently, keeping her eyes fixed anxiously on him.
Good heavens, he's speaking again. I think you are laughing. Why do you keep laughing at me? I notice that you are laughing at me all the time,
he said, turning with a sudden and uneasy irritation to Yevgeny Pavlovich. The latter really was laughing.
I only wanted to ask you, Mr. Ippolit. Excuse me, I've forgotten your name.
Mr. Terentyev, said Mushkin.
Yes, Terentyev. Thank you, Prince. It was mentioned before, but it escaped my memory. I wanted to ask you, Mr. Terentyev, is it true what I've heard, that you believe that you have only to talk to the peasants out of the window for a quarter of an hour, and they'll agree with you and follow you at once?
It's quite possible I've said so,
answered Ippolit, seeming to recall something.
I certainly did say so,
he added suddenly, growing eager again and looking at Yevgeny Pavlovich.
What of it?
Well, absolutely nothing. I simply wanted to know, to put the finishing touch.
Yevgeny Pavlovich was silent, but Ippolit still looked at him in impatient expectation.
Well, have you finished? Lizaveta Prokofievna asked Yevgeny Pavlovich. Make haste and finish, my friends. He ought to be in bed, or don't you know how to?
She was in terrible vexation.
I am very much tempted to add, Yevgeny Pavlovich went on, smiling, that everything I've heard from your companions, Mr. Terentyev, and everything you've said just now, and with such unmistakable talent, amounts, in my opinion, to the theory of the triumph of right before everything, and setting everything aside, and even to the exclusion of everything else, and perhaps even before finding out what that right consists in. Perhaps I am mistaken.
Of course you are mistaken. I don't even understand you. Further?
There was a murmur in the corner, too. Lebedev's nephew was muttering something in an undertone.
Why, scarcely anything further, Yevgeny Pavlovich went on. I only meant to observe that from that position one may easily make a jump to the right of might. That is, to the right of the individual fist and of personal caprice, as indeed has often happened in the history of the world. Proudhon arrived at the right of might. In the American War, many of the most advanced liberals declared themselves on the side of the planters, on the ground that Negroes are Negroes, lower than the white race, and therefore that right of might was on the side of the white men.
Well?
So then you don't deny that might is right?
Further?
Well, I must say you are logical. I only wanted to observe that from the right of might to the right of tigers and crocodiles, and even to the right of Danilovs and Gorskys, is not a long step.
I don't know. Further?
Ippolit scarcely heard what Yevgeny Pavlovich said, and asked well and further, more from a habit he had formed in arguments than from attention or curiosity.
Nothing more. That's all.
I'm not angry with you, though,
Ippolit concluded suddenly and quite unexpectedly, and hardly knowing what he was doing, he held out his hand, even smiling. Yevgeny Pavlovich was surprised at first, but with the most serious air touched the hand which was offered to him, as though accepting forgiveness.
I must add, he said, in the same equivocally respectful tone, my gratitude to you for the attention with which you have listened to me, for from my numerous observations, our liberals are never capable of letting anyone else have a conviction of his own without at once meeting their opponent with abuse, or even something worse. Oh, you're perfectly right there, observed General Apanshin. And, folding his hands behind his back, he retreated with a bored air to the steps of the veranda, where he yawned with vexation.
Well, that's enough of you, my friend, Lizaveta Prokofievna announced suddenly to Yevgeny Pavlovich. I'm tired of you.
It's late.
Ippolit suddenly got up, looked preoccupied and almost alarmed, gazing about him in perplexity.
I've kept you. I wanted to tell you everything. I thought that everyone, for the last time, that was fancy.
It was evident that he revived by fits and starts. He would suddenly come to himself from actual delirium for a few minutes. He would remember and talk with complete consciousness, chiefly in disconnected phrases, which he had perhaps thought out and learnt by heart in the long, weary hours of his illness, in his bed, in sleepless solitude.
Well, goodbye,
he said suddenly and abruptly.
Do you think it's easy for me to say goodbye to you?
He laughed angrily at his awkward question, and, seeming suddenly to grow furious at continually failing to say what he wanted to say, he said loudly and irritably,
Your Excellency, I have the honour of inviting you to my funeral, if only you think me worthy of such an honour, and all of you ladies and gentlemen, in the wake of the general.
He laughed again, but it was the laugh of a madman. Lizaveta Prokofievna moved towards him in alarm and took him by the arm. He looked at her intently with the same laugh which seemed to have stopped short and frozen on his face.
Do you know I came here to see the trees? These here.
He pointed to the trees in the park.
That's not ridiculous, is it? There's nothing ridiculous in it.
He asked Lizaveta Prokofievna seriously. And suddenly he sank into thought. Then a minute later raised his head and began inquisitively looking about in the company. He was looking for Yevgeny Pavlovich, who was standing quite near on the right of him in the same place as before, but he had already forgotten and looked round.
Ah, you've not gone away.
He found him at last.
You were laughing just now at my wanting to talk out of the window for a quarter of an hour. But do you know I'm not 18? I've lain so much on that pillow and looked out of that window, and thought so much about everyone that... A dead man has no age, you know. I thought that last week when I woke up in the night. And do you know what you are more afraid of than anything? You are more afraid of our sincerity than of anything. Though you do despise us. I thought that too, lying on my pillow that night. You think I meant to laugh at you, Lizaveta Prokofievna? No, I was not laughing at you. I only wanted to praise you. Kolya told me the prince said you were a child. That's good. Yes? What was it? I was going to say something more.
He hid his face in his hands and pondered.
Oh, yes, when you were saying goodbye. Just now, I suddenly thought, these people here, there never will be any more of them, never. And the trees, too. There will be nothing but the red brick wall. The wall of Meyer's house, opposite my window. Well, tell them about all that. Try to tell them. Here's a beauty. You are dead, you know. Introduce yourself as a dead man. Tell them that the dead may say anything, and that the Princess Maria Alexeyevna won't find fault. You don't laugh.
He scanned them all mistrustfully.
You know, a great many ideas have come into my head as I lay on the pillow. Do you know, I'm convinced that nature is very ironical. You said just now that I am an atheist. But do you know this nature? Why are you laughing again? You are horribly cruel,
he pronounced suddenly with mournful indignation, looking at all of them.
I have not corrupted Kolya.
He concluded in quite a different tone, earnest and convinced, as though remembering something again.
Nobody is laughing at you here. Don't worry yourself,
said Lizaveta Prokofievna in distress.
A new doctor shall come tomorrow. The other one was mistaken. Sit down. You can hardly stand on your legs. You are delirious. Oh, what are we to do with him now?
She asked anxiously, making him sit down in an armchair. A tear gleamed on her cheek. Hippolyte stopped, almost amazed. He raised his hand, stretched it out timidly, and touched the tear. He smiled a childlike smile. He began joyfully.
You don't know how I... He has always talked to me so enthusiastically about you. He, there.
He pointed to Kolya.
I like his enthusiasm. I've never corrupted him. He is the only friend I leave behind. I should like to have left everyone friends. Everyone. But I had none. I meant to do so much. I had the right... Oh, how much I wanted. Now I want nothing. I don't want to want anything. I promised myself not to want anything. Let them seek the truth without me. Yes. Nature is ironical. Why,
he resumed with heat,
why does she create the best beings only to laugh at them afterwards? It is her doing that the sole creature recognized on Earth as perfection. It is her doing that, showing him to men, she has decreed for him to say words for which so much blood has been shed, that if it had been shed at once, men must have been drowned in it. Oh, it's a good thing that I am dying. Perhaps I too should utter some horrible lie. Nature would beguile me into it. I have not corrupted anyone. I wanted to live for the happiness of all men, to discover and proclaim the truth. I gazed out of the window on Maya's wall and dreamed of only speaking for a quarter of an hour and convincing everyone. Everyone! And for once in my life I have met you, though I haven't others, and see what has come of it. Nothing. All that has come of it is that you despise me. So then I am a fool. So then I am not needed. So then it's time for me to go. And I haven't succeeded in leaving any memory behind me. Not a sound, not a trace, not one deed. I haven't preached one truth. Don't laugh at the foolish fellow. Forget. Forget it all. Forget it, please. Don't be so cruel. Do you know that if this consumption hadn't turned up, I should have killed myself?
He seemed wanting to say a great deal more, but did not say it. He sank back in the chair, covered his face with his hands, and began crying like a little child.
"Well, what are we to do with him now?"
exclaimed Lizaveta Prokofievna. She darted up to him, took his head and pressed it close to her bosom. He sobbed convulsively.
"There, there, there. Come, don't cry. Come, that's enough. You are a good boy. God will forgive you because of your ignorance. Come, that's enough. Be a man. Besides, you'll feel ashamed."
"Up there,"
said Hippolyte, trying to raise his head.
"I've a brother and sisters. Little children.
Poor, innocent. She will corrupt them. You are a saint. You are a child yourself. Save them. Get them away from that woman. She... a disgrace. Oh, help them. Help them. God will repay you 100-fold. For God's sake. For Christ's sake. Do tell me, Ivan Fyodorovitch, what is to be done now?
Lizaveta Prokofievna cried irritably.
Be so good as to break your majestic silence. If you don't decide something, you may as well know that I shall stay the night here myself. You've tyrannized over me enough with your despotism.
Lizaveta Prokofievna spoke with excitement and anger, and awaited an immediate reply. But in such cases, those present, if there are many of them, usually receive such questions in silence and with passive interest, unwilling to take anything upon themselves, and only express their opinions long afterwards. Among those present on this occasion, there were some who were capable of sitting there till morning without uttering a word. Varvara Ardalionovna, for instance, had been sitting at a little distance all the evening, listening in silence with an extraordinary interest, for which there were perhaps special reasons.
"My opinion, my dear," the general expressed himself at last, "is that a nurse is more needed here than our agitation, and perhaps a trustworthy, sober person for the night. In any case, the prince must be asked, and the invalid must have rest at once. And tomorrow we can show interest in him again."
"It's 12 o'clock.
We're going. Is he coming with us or is he staying with you?
Doktorenko asked Mushkin, irritably and angrily.
If you like, you can stay here with him, said Mushkin. There'll be room.
Your Excellency!
Mr. Keller suddenly and enthusiastically flew up to General Apanshin.
If a satisfactory man is wanted for the night, I am ready to sacrifice myself for a friend. He is such a soul. I've long considered him a great man, Your Excellency. My education has been defective, of course, but his criticisms, they are pearls. Pearls, Your Excellency.
The general turned away in despair. I shall be very glad if he will stay, of course. It's difficult for him to be moved, Mushkin replied to Lizaveta Prokofievna's irritable questions.
Are you asleep? If you don't want him, my friend, I'll take him home with us. My goodness, he can hardly stand upright himself. Why, you are ill.
Earlier in the evening, Lizaveta Prokofievna, not finding Mushkin at death's door, had been misled by appearances into exaggerating his strength. But his recent illness, the painful recollections associated with it, the fatigue of this strenuous evening, the incident with the son of Pavlishchov, and the to-do with Ippolit now, all worked upon the morbid sensitiveness of Mushkin and excited him almost into a fever. Another anxiety, almost a fear, could moreover be discerned in his eyes. He looked apprehensively at Ippolit, as though expecting something more from him. Suddenly, Ippolit got up, horribly pale, and with an expression of terrible, almost despairing shame on his distorted face. It was expressed chiefly in his eyes, which looked with fear and hatred at the company, and in the vacant, twisted, and abject grin on his quivering lips. He dropped his eyes at once and strolled, staggering and still with the same smile, up to Berdovsky and Doktorenko, who were standing at the veranda steps. He was going away with them.
"Oh, that's what I was afraid of!" cried Mushkin. "That was bound to happen!"
Ippolit turned quickly to him with frenzied anger, and every feature in his face seemed to be quivering and speaking.
"Ah, you were afraid of that, were you? That was bound to happen, you say? Then let me tell you, if I hate anyone here,"
he yelled, spluttering with a hoarse shriek,
"I hate you all! Every one of you! It's you, Jesuitical, treacly soul, idiot, philanthropic millionaire! I hate you more than everyone and everything in the world! I understood and hated you long ago when first I heard of you. I hated you with all the hatred of my soul! This has all been your contriving. You led me on to breaking down. You drove a dying man to shame. You are to blame for my abject cowardice! I would kill you if I were going to remain alive. I don't want your benevolence. I won't take anything, do you hear, from anyone. I was in delirium, and don't you dare to triumph. I curse every one of you once and for all."
Here he choked completely.
"He's ashamed of his tears," Lebedev whispered to Lizaveta Prokofievna. "That was bound to happen. Bravo, the prince. He saw right through him."
But Lizaveta Prokofievna did not deign to glance at him. She was standing proudly erect, with her head thrown back, scanning these miserable people with contemptuous curiosity. When Ippolit had finished, General Apanshin shrugged his shoulders. His wife looked him up and down wrathfully, as though asking an explanation of his movement, and at once turned to Mushkin.
"We must thank you, Prince, the eccentric friend of our family, for the agreeable evening you have given us all. I suppose your heart is rejoicing now at having succeeded in dragging us into your foolery. Enough, my dear friend. Thank you for having let us have a clear view at last of what you are, anyway."
She began indignantly setting straight her mantle, waiting for those people to get off. A cab drove up at that moment to take them. Doktorenko had sent Lebedev's son, the schoolboy, to fetch it a quarter of an hour before. Immediately after his wife, General Apanshin managed to put in his word, too.
"Oh, yes, indeed, Prince. I should never have expected it. After everything, after all our friendly relations. And then Lizaveta Prokofievna."
How can you?
Cried Adelaida. She walked quickly up to Mushkin and gave him her hand. Mushkin smiled at her with a bewildered face. Suddenly a rapid, excited whisper seemed to scorch his ear.
"If you don't throw up these nasty people at once, I shall hate you all my life, all my life,"
Aglaya whispered to him. She seemed in a sort of frenzy, but she turned away before he had time to look at her. However, he had by now nothing and no one to throw up. They had by this time succeeded somehow in getting the invalid into the cab, and it had driven away.
"Well, how much longer is this going on, Ivan Fyodorovich? What do you say to it? How long am I to be tormented by these spiteful boys?"
"Well, my dear, I'm ready, of course, and the prince..."
Ivan Fyodorovich held out his hand to Mushkin, however, but, without staying to shake hands, ran after Lizaveta Prokofievna, who descended the terrace steps rustling and wrathful. Alexandra, Adelaida, and her betrothed took leave of Mushkin with genuine affection. Yevgeny Pavlovich did the same, and he alone was in good spirits.
"It happened as I thought it would. Only I'm sorry you, poor fellow, have had such a bad time," he whispered, with a most charming smile.
Aglaya went away without saying goodbye. But the adventures of that evening were not yet over. Lizaveta Prokofievna had still to face a very unexpected meeting. Before she had descended the veranda steps to the road, which ran along the edge of the park, a magnificent carriage, drawn by two white horses, came dashing by Mushkin's villa. Two gorgeously dressed ladies were sitting in it, but the carriage suddenly pulled up not 10 paces beyond the house. One of the ladies turned round quickly, as though she had suddenly caught sight of a friend she must speak to.
"Yevgeny Pavlovich, is that you, dear?"
cried a beautiful ringing voice, which made Mushkin, and perhaps someone else too, start.
"Oh, how glad I am I found you at last. I sent a messenger to you in town, two of them. They've been looking for you all day."
Yevgeny Pavlovich stood on the veranda steps as though thunderstruck. Lizaveta Prokofievna, too, stood still, but not in horror and petrifaction like Yevgeny Pavlovich. She looked at the audacious person with the same pride and cold contempt as she had 5 minutes before at these miserable people, and at once turned her steady gaze on Yevgeny Pavlovich.
"I have news," the ringing voice continued. "Don't worry about Kupfer's IOUs. Rogozhin has bought them up for 30. I persuaded him. You can be easy for another 3 months, and we'll manage Biskup and all those wretches through friends. Do you see? Everything is all right. Keep up your spirits, dear. Till tomorrow."
The carriage set off and quickly disappeared.
"It's a madwoman," exclaimed Yevgeny Pavlovich at last, flushing with indignation and looking round him bewildered. "I haven't an idea what she was talking about. What IOUs? Who is she?"
Lizaveta Prokofievna went on looking at him for another 2 seconds. At last, she set off quickly and abruptly towards her villa, and all the rest followed her. 1 minute later, Yevgeny Pavlovich came back to Mushkin on the veranda, extremely agitated.
"Prince, tell the truth. Do you know what it means?"
"I know nothing about it," answered Mushkin, who was himself in a state of extreme and painful tension.
"No?"
"No."
"And I don't know."
Yevgeny Pavlovich laughed suddenly.
"I swear I've nothing to do with any IOUs. You may believe my word of honour.
But what's the matter?"
"You're fainting."
"Oh, no, no. I assure you, no."